It's that time again on a Friday when AM Live presents another update from the coalface with Martin Krimmer, publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. Martin, a very good morning. Good to see you.
And to you, Kulani.
Thank you very much. Well, Martin, as state electricity tariffs rise, and we spoke about it this week quite a lot here on SAFM, South Africa's private sector is looking to ways of generating electricity themselves at lower costs.
Yeah, it's becoming a business case for some companies now to generate their own electricity. And as we speak, you know, one of them, which is listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, Jubilee Platinum, has already got approval from the National Electricity Regulator of South Africa, NERSA, to sell its surplus power to Eskom. Hmm. So it's going to be producing out in Mpumalanga. It'll do its own business, processing its own metals and minerals, etc. But with this power alt business that it's got, which is a separate power generation business, it'll also have some surpluses and it can sell them in. But what the story there is that it's got a business case to do it. Now, more long-term, you look at companies like Steenkampskraal Thorium. They're starting to think thorium. You know, for a long time now, we've looked at uranium and thought, well, this is the way to get nuclear power. Mm-hmm. And then all sorts of world authorities come down on you because they say, oh, you're going to have weapons grade. Just now you're going to give this to the terrorists, you know, all sorts of things like that. Mm. Whereas with thorium, you don't have those waste issues and you don't have those proliferation issues. And, of course, we're mining rare earth metals in the Cape. And one of the byproducts is thorium. Mm-hmm. And so they've quickly set up this business, Steenkamp Thorium Limited, which aims now not only to mine that thorium and beneficiate that thorium, but to take it a step further and create reactors. Now, we know that the government spent about 10 billion rand, you know, on the pebble bed modular reactor program. I mean, we used to go to Centurion and see 200 scientists and engineers sitting there working flat out on that pebble bed modular reactor. And then they said, no more. Boom. And so now these fellas are picking up some of the pieces and saying, look, there was a lot of research done there. We as private sector now, can we collaborate, get some of that laboratory equipment, etc.? And they are planning to produce power from thorium. Mm. And again, safer, less proliferation issues, lower cost. But the big thing about this is that it can be taken to remote areas. It doesn't rely on a situation of transmission lines. And we know Eskom have got a massive job on their hands with transmission lines. I think they're budgeting like 140 billion rand over the next 10 years to try and get those transmission lines in. Mm. Whereas these guys are saying, look, we can give you the plant. It's based on the pebble bed modular reactor, which died on the vine, but we've got a lot of the know-how there. In fact, we might cooperate. If we can't, we can still create these fuel elements. And you can have your own little power station there, 100 megawatts right next to your mine. Mm. If you want another one, you bolt another 100 megawatt on. And this is the thinking today, whereas Eskom goes for those massive bespoke power stations. People are saying, no, you can import power stations from China. Hmm. 200 megawatt worth, you bolt two together, you've got 400 megawatt. You bolt five together, you've got 1,000 megawatts. So different thinking coming through.
Very, very interesting. Fascinating stuff. Canadians, Martin, are now showing far more guts than South Africans in raising billions of rand for a brand new platinum project in Limpopo, despite turmoil in the platinum sector.
You know, I mean, I think the big victim in the whole platinum fight at the moment is the investor saying, gee, you know, the investor's coming in and they're ripping us off and we want more. But look at the situation now, where most people would run a mile before they put any money into a platinum mine. These Canadian investors, you know, they're not even South African. They listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. This is Ivan Platts. They're prepared to build a new mine in Limpopo. And probably in a few years, we'll be saying, oh, no, they're ripping us off. But, you know, they're putting in like 3 billion rand.
They see an opportunity.
They see an opportunity. 3 billion rand, yeah. They're not even coming near the Johannesburg Stock Exchange because they know we're risk averse. Yeah, in South Africa, you know, we don't go for these things. Mm. These fellas are looking at a very encouraging mining project. It's in the Platte Reef in Limpopo province. And I've heard Robert Friedland, who's a very celebrated explorer and discoverer, speak at the Indaba in Cape Town on this very project at Limpopo. And he waxed lyrical because he said, it is so rich, you know, that's so large, so high grade, and it's going to be highly mechanized. You know, it's an underground operation. And it's close to Mogalakwena. Mogalakwena is a wonderful mine. That's in the Anglo Platinum stable. And it's so rich as well that, you know, in 2007, 2008, they got their platinum for nothing. When I say that, it means that the money that they received from their nickel credits and the byproduct credits, because there's also nickel involved here, paid for the platinum. And now Robert Friedland with Ivan Platts, listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange main board as of this week, having raised this capital, $3 billion. He's in a similar position in a similar neighborhood now and looking to go ahead with a new project there, not even ruling out the possibility of smelting and refinery, and getting backed on his initial public offering by some of the biggest investment banking institutions. So there is still confidence, yet South Africans are shy.
Very interesting. It's that good old risks and reward type situation. They see that, yes, the risks are high, but the rewards are also handsome.
Exactly.
Interesting. Right, then finally, Martin, pressure growing on the mining companies to adopt global best practice when it comes to the sector's vexing migrant labor system.
Yeah, you know, we can cry when it comes to migrant labor systems and the fact that we just haven't even adopted global best practice. I mean, migrant labor systems are, you know, obnoxious. They shouldn't be there. But where they are in the world, you've got certain things of the work cycles are short so that people can get home. You know that here we are, 2012, we still haven't adopted best practice in the mining industry when it comes to migrants. And there's no excuse for that. Yeah. I mean, if you go back to Cry the Beloved Country, that book, you know, that was written in 1948. It's a work of fiction written in 1948. But if you go to pages 148 and 149, the only real name character in there, and all the other names are fictitious, is Sir Ernest Oppenheimer. That's the real live person that they put his name in there. And they put words into his mouth saying, we don't want to ever have another Johannesburg with these hostels and this migrant labor and the families split apart.
1948.
And that they get Sir Ernest to say, look, no, no, when I go into this new field in the Free State, I'm going to build a new field, and there we're going to get rid of this idea of compounds, as they called them. And as a kid, I used to go into some of those compounds. They were horrific. And we're going to have mine villages, you know, where man can live with his wife and children, etc. But of course, that was 1948. This book was written, published. And in 1948, the National Party came in and introduced apartheid. So that put pay to that. But you know, since 1994, we haven't changed this migrant labor system. We've still got this yearly cycle. You cannot have a yearly cycle where you only go home at Christmas and Easter to your family. So obviously you're going to build another family, which is what happens. So you build a near mine community, but then they exacerbated the whole thing and gave these living out allowances and turned the whole place into a near mine slum. So now that, I think, the government, the local authority, the mining industry, and, you know, these traditional leaders, because they're also losing out with the people are not remitting their cash back to the rural areas because they've got so many commitments up on the mines. I think they must all sit down and work out that at minimum, you've got to go for global best practice. You know, every 15 days or every 10 days, people have either got to have a logistics system to get to their real homes. Or get the families up. You cannot continue like this.
Very, very vexing question, as you point out, Martin. Martin Creamer is publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. He'll be back at the coalface at the same time next Friday. Thank you very much, Martin.
It's a great pleasure, appreciate it. Glenn.